My name is Jesse Henning. I'm the executive director of the Garfield County Libraries. Want to thank both of our guests, both Jim and Nathan, for being here. Want to thank all of you for coming out. We've literally blown the doors off because we've had to move them. But another thing that's really important for us, and I know that we've given Jim a round of applause, but prepare to give him another round of applause. You'll notice on the wall, we have renamed the community room the Callaway Community Room. This is actually one of our first, yeah. This is probably the largest program we've had it so far since it's been named, really kind of christened it. Jim's been so great to the library district. He's been a big supporter of libraries, big supporter of our efforts in making sure that people's First Amendment rights to read what they want without somebody having to tell them what to read is something they can do. So I actually have something to give to Jim. So we have this medal that we give out to staff. So when a staff member does something extremely exceptional, we hand medals out to them. And Mr. Callaway's done really exceptional stuff for us as part of his legacy donation, the advance on that. But one thing that's really important is on the back is a quote from Theodore Roosevelt that says, "Far and away the best prize that life offers is the chance to work hard at work worth doing." And I feel that all of us can probably agree that, you know, both Jim and both Nathan have done a lot of work that is worth doing. So if you guys could please give them both a hand, give Jim a hand. Thank you so much. And we'll give you this. You're the only non-library staff member who has that. So it's a value on the gray market is substantial. So thank you guys so much for coming out. I will pass my mic off so you can actually get to the program you came here for and stop listening to me talking.
Is Bill here?
Okay. Jesse, thank you very much for this gift. When I saw Nathan come in here tonight, I asked him, I said, "What in the world is that around your neck?" And I'd forgotten what they call that. I used to wear them 5 days a week, but I'd forgotten that they're called a tie. It's really a wonderful thing for Nathan Woodliffe Stanley to be with us this evening. He's the executive director of the ACLU of Colorado, which is one of the outstanding affiliates in the country, and just doing a great job of leading us, and he's going to tell us a lot about that here in just a second. But I do want to emphasize this, that the library and the ACLU have something in common. We're nonpartisan. The ACLU is not a partisan organization. It is a nonpartisan organization that has had a historic benefit to our country in preserving civil liberties and fighting like crazy to do that. And let me give you just a couple of quick examples. When I was involved in the ACLU in Texas many years ago, we had a case that went to the Supreme Court that I was involved in, getting a lawyer and so forth. And it was the Socialist Workers Party. Maybe some of y'all are old enough to have heard about them. They used to wander around the big cities and trying to talk about communism or something. And we had a group of them in Houston. In this case we had, one time during Christmas, the Salvation Army was set up on one block in Houston collecting money for Christmas. And down the street in the next block were some of these Socialist Workers Party, not collecting money, but just passing out a little piece of literature. And the police ran them off, would not let them stay there. And they came and complained to us. And we took that case up and represented them in the court, decided Houston was wrong in what they were doing then. And that's on the liberal side. One of the most misunderstood cases that the ACLU's probably ever had was Skokie, Illinois case. Something took place in the town of Skokie, Illinois, and it's where a group of Nazi sympathizers wanted a parade permit, and the town refused to give it to them, and the ACLU took their case and represented them to give them that American right of free speech. That hurt the ACLU a lot. I'll never forget it because was the very time that I was asked to become the national treasurer of the ACLU, which I served for several years, because it brought about financial difficulties for the national organization, because a number of people did not like the fact that we were helping Knox's have a parade. So we are a nonpartisan organization. As Beth said, the first part of the program is going to be that Nathan, I want him to just, he's a brilliant man, graduated Yale University, which is a really good school if you can't go to Texas. And he is a Unitarian minister until he took this job. And by the way, he's speaking at our Unitarian church in the morning at 10 o'clock or at 3rd Street, if any of you are interested in hearing his lesson in the morning. Some people call them sermons. I'm tired of that. The Baptists called them so long to me, giving me sermons that I like lessons better. But anyway, I want him to take over now and talk to you about what the important issues that he sees the ACLU has done in the past, and particularly what they're doing in Colorado now. Nathan, it's a real honor to have you, son.
Thank you. Thank you. I think I'm gonna stand up here because I can't really. I don't think people can see if I don't. And there's some people that are standing, and if you can stand, I can too. And yes, it's true. When you come to this part of the state with a tie on, people think you're coming from the IRS. They run from you. But I actually don't wear a tie on a daily basis. But I have to have one in my office so that at any point if I have to go to the Capitol building for something, I can throw on that tie and do what I have to do. But I want to thank, certainly I want to thank Beth and the Historical Society. I want to thank the library, everybody that's been involved in this. And I really want to thank Jim, who not only was involved in the Texas ACLU, but he was actually one of the founders of the first chapter of the ACLU in Texas. And he was national treasurer for the national ACLU. He's been a big supporter of the ACLU here in Colorado. So he has a long and strong history with civil liberties and with the ACLU. And so very appropriate that about 60 years. I wasn't going to put the years on it. But anyway, it is it's a real pleasure to be here with you, Jim. Let me start by how many of you here would say that you are at least somewhat familiar with the ACLU? Good, a lot of familiarity. How many of you would say you're really very deeply familiar with the ACLU? You know a lot about it. So there's some good knowledge here, but there's some the awareness of the ACLU is pretty high within this country, but I have to say I got to witness a group of 20-year-olds who were interviewed, 20-year-olds who are activists, like in a lot of different things in the community, and they were asked a bunch of questions, and one of them was how many of them were familiar with the ACLU. Only one of them had ever even heard of the ACLU, and they were asked some questions about the Constitution. What they were asked, where does the phrase "We the People" come from? None of them knew. They were asked, where is the Bill of Rights found? None of them knew. They were asked, can you name one thing in the Constitution of the United States? Dead silence. There is a lot of awareness, but there is also some lack of awareness about our country and how it works and what the Constitution is, what it's about, what the Bill of Rights is all about. And that's what the ACLU is all about. The ACLU has been part of our American history for almost a century now. The ACLU was started in 1920. Very interesting time when you think about it. I've wondered what it was like back then because a number of organizations that we still work with today came from that era. The NAACP was started in 1909. The Anti-Defamation League was started in 1913. Planned Parenthood was started in 1916. Women got the vote in 1920, the same year that the ACLU was founded. So I think, again, that was it's a very interesting era that we come from. And the focus of the very first things that the ACLU did were around free speech. free speech for labor organizers, free speech for anti-war activists, free speech for people who weren't getting free speech. And an interesting thing is that prior to that time, before the ACLU existed, there had not been a single Supreme Court ruling in favor of free speech rights. It took an organization like this to exist to bring the cases to the Supreme Court that really made that something that was real. And that's really what I think of as the core mission of the ACLU, is to take the promises in the Constitution, the promises in the Bill of Rights, and make them real, not just words on a piece of paper. There are plenty of countries that have great-sounding constitutions, but they don't really mean anything because they aren't taken seriously. And the second part of it is to really make sure that those rights are real for everyone and not just for some people. Because that's really been our nation's struggle throughout its history. You have all of these, I mean, wonderful things about this country and the ideals that it was founded on. You have the promises of inalienable rights and we the people and general welfare and, you know, no religious test for office and e pluribus unum and liberty and justice for all and all of these phrases that sound very universal. They sound like they apply to everyone. But of course, the sin of our nation, if you want to call it that, is that we didn't apply it to everyone. It didn't apply to Native Americans. It didn't apply to slaves who were forcibly brought here. Women didn't have the vote. Immigrant groups repeatedly who have come to this country have been resisted when they've come. And so really, in many ways, the story of this nation is the story of two different stories of our founding, which are both true. The story of all of those ideals, which were meant to really apply to everyone, and then the fact that they didn't apply to everyone, and how do we make that real for all people in this country. And to me, that's what the ACLU is really ultimately all about. The ACLU has affiliates in every state. It's remarkable in its breadth and depth. It's a strong national organization, but there are affiliates in every state, which means many issues really play out at the state and local level, as well as at the national level. And so whenever something happens anywhere in the country, the ACLU is well positioned to be able to respond to that. Our affiliate here in Colorado was started in 1952. We're based in Denver, but we certainly work statewide. We currently have 16 full-time staff. If you go back just less than 10 years ago, it was half that size. Just 1 year ago, or 10 years ago, this affiliate had no director of public policy. We had no director of communications. We had no researcher on staff. These are all positions that we do have today, and it's greatly increased our ability to respond to the things that are going on in this state and going on around the world. The ACLU of Colorado and the National ACLU and all of the other affiliates are all really two organizations. If you're familiar with sort of nonprofit language and structures, there's a 501c3 and a 501c4 organization. And this is true nationally, it's true in Colorado, it's true in every state. And the 501c3 is the charitable organization. That's the one that if you donate to it, it's tax deductible. That's the organization that does most of the legal work, which is probably the thing that the ACLU has done the longest. We've been sort of a public interest law firm for our whole history. But the legal work, the educational work that we do, including civics education for youth, Constitution Day, and we have some other, their Cheltenham program and other educational programs, our educational programs with the our Speakers Bureau and our Know Your Rights trainings and things like that we do. Most of our communications, our media work, the things that we put out, those are all part of the 501c3 organization. The 501c4 organization is the membership organization. It's the one, and that's why membership's not tax deductible. And if you ever get confused about that, it's because it's really two organizations. You make a donation, that's tax deductible. If you join as a member, it's not. And that's because it's a C4. All of our lobbying work comes out of the 501c4, or most of it anyway, comes out of the 501c4 organization. So our public policy lobbying work, the things that we do that are direct member-related programs, those come out of that organization. We have the same board for both organizations, so it really functions as one organization, but for legal and accounting purposes, it's really, you know, two separate things. If you are a member of the ACLU, by the way, you are also a member of both the national and the state. There's not two separate memberships. So if you ever wonder, like, am I a member of the ACLU of Colorado? If you're a member of the ACLU, then the answer is yes, if you live in Colorado. If you lived in Utah, you'd be a member of the ACLU of Utah. I mean, it's wherever you live, you are a member of that state affiliate and the national at the same time. And most of that's really handled by our national organization, which is a great thing. The national organization, several years ago, about 15, 20 years ago, created an affiliate support structure that hadn't even existed before, and it's now one of the largest departments in the national ACLU. So we work very closely with the people at national. So if there's a question and we don't know how to interpret, how to approach a legal issue or a public policy issue or something like that, they're wonderful, amazing, smart, talented people that we get to call up at the national ACLU. And so it all works together as a very strong whole, and I'm so delighted to be a part of it. Now, you know, in the times that we're in right now, there are obviously a lot of people who are concerned about things that are going on in the country. As Jim said, we are a nonpartisan organization. We don't take positions on candidates for political office. We don't take positions on political parties. And actually, this, even though this wouldn't be legally barred, it's been longstanding ACLU policy that we don't take positions on political appointees either. That's been kind of challenging for us recently, and we've had to, we've walked up to that line, but not crossed it. Absolutely. We could all have our opinions on that, but we're here for the civil rights and civil liberties of everyone. I mean, that really is the case. And people who don't like the ACLU, we're here for their rights too. So that you'd be surprised how people that have disliked the ACLU all their lives, and then they have a situation where they need us and they turn to us, we're willing to respond. So we really are here for everyone. Now, if you went to our national website the day after the election, you would have seen a picture of the president-elect with the word "see you in court" on there. And you could easily say, okay, so how is that not being partisan? But really, what it's about is that there were many statements that were made by the president during the election and actions that have been taken since then that are things that we respond to. We've actually criticized every president that we've had. There were a number of things that we were quite hard on President Obama around. And it's, you know, whether it's his, you know, drone and programs, the ultimate failure to close Guantanamo, some of his deportation programs. I mean, there were things we were extremely critical of. But what it's about with the current president is not the person, it's not his personality, it's not his party, it's the positions, it's the issues. And it's a hard thing. If you work on issues that are in the political arena, some of those do cross party lines, and we work on those a lot, especially here at the state level. We have a divided legislature in Colorado that is, the Republicans control the Senate, Democrats control the House, and so any legislation that gets passed in Colorado has to have bipartisan support right now. Last year, we had six bills. The ACLU had six bills that we were actively working to get passed. It's fairly easy to kill a bad bill in this environment, but to get something passed is really hard. And all six of those bills were passed and signed by the governor and went into law. And so we had to obviously work in a bipartisan way. We had Republican senators in the Senate that were sponsoring these bills. It had to be the case. And on issues like criminal justice reform, some aspects of privacy and surveillance issues. It's actually quite possible for us to work across party lines, especially here in Colorado. There's certainly plenty of partisanship here, but it's not quite as bad as it is in the at the national level. And so we do work very hard across party lines in this state. And we got bills passed for against debtors' prison practices, student privacy, student data privacy bill, a bill for public defenders at first hearing in municipal courts, a bill around juvenile life without parole. These were bills we were able to get passed in a bipartisan way in this legislature. And I'll come back to some of the things that we're working on in this legislative session in a little bit. But it's also true there are some issues that really line up with politicians and political parties, and we're not going to stop working on those. It's hard to not look partisan when you're working on an issue that one party entirely supports and one party doesn't, but I can assure you that we're working on it because of the issue, not because of the party. And so, yes, we are a nonpartisan organization, but we are deeply committed to civil rights and civil liberties for everyone, and we will stand up to any president, any politician who proposes or tries to act upon policies that that would violate those rights and liberties. So that's where we're coming on all of that. In our work here in Colorado, as I said, it was focused in the past primarily on legal work, but we really have expanded into public policy, into communications. We have a researcher that the ACLU of Michigan actually hired an investigative reporter. And that investigative reporter was looking into these arrangements for how the cities in these special managers of cities in Michigan. And while he was working on that, he kept hearing about problems with the water. And he turned over what he found to a professor at Virginia Tech, and that broke open the whole Flint, Michigan water story. It actually started with the ACLU of Michigan, and I thought, gee, you know, maybe we'll get an investigative reporter at some point. I mean, there's less of that happening, less real investigative reporting in some of the media these days, and so you can see why it's something that we could move into. But my point is that what we've been doing is really broadening our toolkit. We've been broadening the methods that we use. It's the same goal, expanding and defending civil rights and civil liberties for all people. That goal hasn't changed. But how we go about doing that, it's not only in the courts, but it's also in the legislatures and the city councils. It's also in the public arena as well. And that's one of the things that has really changed since the election. There is a lot. There were a lot of important issues, and I'll touch on some of them tonight, that came up in the election and that have come up since then, both at the national level and here in Colorado. Things like immigration, the things like what you saw around the travel ban that was aimed at Muslims and Muslim countries. And the ACLU really struck the first blow against that executive order. And it was important that it happened that quickly because it was affecting people right off the bat. And it put a stop to that very, very quickly. And people have noticed. And people who are concerned about our democracy, about some of our fundamental structures and our checks and balances and the separation of powers and an independent judiciary and an independent press and all of these things that are crucial to the functioning of our country and our democracy, a lot of them have looked at the ACLU and said, that's an organization that is really well positioned to do this work, and we need the ACLU to be here right now. And I mean, the response that we've seen is unimaginable to me. The national ACLU had about 500,000 members before the election. It's 1.5 million today. It's tripled. Now, the NRA says they have 5 million members, so we're still, you know, we'd like to think that an organization that defends the whole Constitution would be bigger than an organization that only defends one amendment, but it's been very significant growth, and here in Colorado, we had 7,000 current members as of right before November. And as of today, we have 28,000 members in Colorado. So, yes, people have been stepping forward. What you saw with the Women's March, what you saw with the people who went to the airports after the travel ban, what you've seen in other people turning out in other circumstances, this is the thing that gives me the most hope right now. People are very motivated. People are getting more engaged. I think the big question is, will that continue? Will people continue to stay this engaged as we go forward? Because this isn't just going to be for a few weeks or a few months. It's going to be for years that we will be facing some of the challenges that we're facing right now. And I hope that that interest and that engagement and that energy continues. Another thing that's happened, we've typically in our Colorado office, we've had maybe 20 or 30 volunteers a year that we work with, and we've had 2,000 people say they want to volunteer for us since the election. Well, obviously we can't have 2,000 volunteers in our office. That clearly doesn't work. And so we've been looking at what is it that we can do? How can people, you know, be engaged? And so we've put out a newsletter that's just for volunteer activists. People can sign up for that, and when there are things that we need people for, we let them know through that newsletter or through other emails or mailings. We have an email action list so that if people sign up for that, and we have legislative calls to action, and say, you know, call your legislator, call the governor, whoever. People will get those lists, and we encourage people to do that. We encourage, there are things anybody can do like that. Anybody can follow us on social media and forward messages or retweet things or put something on their own Facebook page from ours. There's a lot of things like that that people can do and a lot of people are doing. And so we've had some great volunteers who've come out of that. But if you've volunteered and you've wondered, well, I haven't heard anything specific that I should do, please have patience because it's a challenge. It's a wonderful thing, but it's a challenge to have that many people come forward. And there are things like that anybody can do. The National ACLU has had the same phenomenon and has the same question. And what they've done is they've started a program that's called People Power. They had the first event of that on March 11th. You know, I have to say that it's come out of the National ACLU, and so far at the state level, I mean, we don't even know who the people are that are participating in the People Power work. So there, or even the people that are leading some of the local groups, but there were 2,000 groups that formed on the first day that they put that out from the National ACLU. 50 of them were here in Colorado. And I am sure that we will get more tied in with that as it goes forward, but we've had some coordination hiccups with that just because it's all moving so fast. But it's also trying to respond to this desire to do something. Now, that very first People Power meeting was focused on, there was an ask that was made at it, and it was around encouraging people to support policies in their local communities that the National ACLU is calling Freedom City policies. It goes beyond some of the things that people have talked about as sanctuary. I mean, one of the problems with the word sanctuary is it isn't very well defined. And I'll probably come back to that because I imagine that's something that people want to talk about. But it's not even clear really what it means. But there are some things that we have already done here in Colorado that some people are calling part of that. But the Freedom Cities is both around not using local law enforcement resources to do the work of federal immigration. We really aren't supposed to do that work. It's not the job of local law enforcement to do it. And actually, in some cases, it's illegal under Colorado law for them to do work that is the work of the federal government. There are those sorts of policies, but there are also things around doing racial profiling or doing discriminatory surveillance that is aimed at groups of people because of their demographic group, whether that's racial or ethnic or nationality or religious. And so these are policies that we've supported. and that the national ACLU is supporting, but it's going to be a long story of how these things play out at the local level, at the state level, and at the national level on immigration, because we're in a, it's a very sort of chaotic and rapidly changing landscape on these sets of issues. And a lot of people are very, are confused. A lot of people are anxious and concerned. So that is certainly one of the issue areas, and I'll come back to it, but it's one of the issue areas that we're working on a lot. Obviously, there are other issue areas that we work on. Voting rights, we have relatively good voting rights laws in Colorado, but there are still things that could be improved. There are still people who can't vote who should be able to vote. People who are out on parole don't have voting rights. We think they should. I actually think everybody who is a citizen should have voting rights. In Maine and in Vermont, even if you're in prison, if you're still a citizen, you still vote. It's a bad temptation to use our criminal justice system as a way of disenfranchising voters. And is one of the issues that, for example, Michelle Alexander talked about in her book, The New Jim Crow, how we use our criminal justice system to take voting rights away. There are some states, like Florida, where, if you have a felony on your record, you don't get to vote for the rest of your life. Felon disenfranchisement alone has changed a number of elections in our country. And these are issues that we care about in Colorado, as well as some of the issues nationally around voter suppression, gerrymandering, things like that, that will, as we get closer to the next rounds of elections, I'm sure some of these voting rights issues will come even more to the fore nationally and in this state. We work a lot on women's rights, reproductive rights, LGBT rights. Some of these are things that we felt fairly confident about and that we've made a lot of progress on, that now some of that progress is really threatened. I mean, we've now seen a change just this week in the Supreme Court, and if there is one more change in the Supreme Court in the next 4 years, it's entirely possible that Roe v. Wade will be repealed. It's entirely possible that same-sex marriage will be repealed and invalidated. This is quite possible. I mean, this could, in fact, it's not that unlikely, actually. And if that happens, if those sorts of things happen, and it becomes, I mean, obviously our work is to support the national ACLU and our national efforts to try to prevent those things from happening. But if it does, and it comes down to the states, Colorado is going to be a really critical state. We're one of the sort of swing battleground states that could go either direction on some of those issues. And also just based on where we're physically located. If, for example, Roe v. Wade was overturned and women had to go to other states, Colorado, by virtue of our location, is the closest state for a whole lot of people in this country that they could go to, and protecting reproductive rights in this state is going to be really important if we reach that point. So one of the things, after the national ACLU put out their see you in court message, we said we need to put out a message for Colorado. And about a week later, we put out a statement that was around making Colorado a civil liberties safe zone, saying that in this state, we want to protect our civil liberties no matter what happens in the rest of the country. We're part of the national fight, of course, but no matter what happens in the rest of the country, we have our own court system here. We have our own legislature here, and we can use those tools to protect rights within our own state as well. And so there's a statement we put out, and it's still up on our website, and you can still find it, that's around the areas that we want to protect of civil rights and civil liberties in Colorado, no matter what happens in the rest of this country. And that includes the things we've been talking about: immigration, voting rights, women's rights, reproductive rights, LGBTQ rights. It includes rights of privacy and around issues of surveillance, First Amendment rights of free speech, freedom of the press, freedom of protest, freedom of assembly, freedom of religion for all religions. It includes criminal justice reform and continuing the work that we've been doing for a long time around mass incarceration and other aspects of criminal justice reform. And so we want to protect all of these things no matter what happens in our country. And some of the work that we're doing, particularly around issues like immigration, are responding to the national picture. But many of them are things that we were already doing and we're going to continue to do at the state level. So if you'd like, I mean, you can jump in anytime, Jim, if you want to ask me a question. Oh, so some of the things at the state level that we're working on, I'll come back to this, what I mentioned before. We're in the middle of the legislature here in Colorado. It starts in January, it ends in May. And here are some of the things we're working on in this legislative session. One is reform in the Department of Youth Corrections. There's a report that we put out called Bound and Broken about a couple months ago, but we've been working on it for a couple of years. And it's research that we've been doing on our Department of Youth Corrections in Colorado and some of the punitive and harmful practices that have been engaged in. There is an overuse of punitive methods such as pain compliance. It's where you physically cause pain to a child in order to get them to obey you or to be compliant. Isolation, the use of a full body straitjacket called the wrap that has, you know, covering over the head, straitjacket over your whole body, can't really move at all. We're one of only a very few states that uses that. It was stopped using in Arkansas because they deemed it a torture device. And so these are things, that practices that we want to end in Colorado, and we're actually promoting positively in place of that. There are some really good examples in other places of programs that are used that are group-based, trauma-informed care, things that really greatly reduce, when they're used, the amount of violence within youth corrections. And they improve recidivism rates. They make the youth safer. They make the staff safer as well. And they don't use those methods. They're really not. In fact, they're counterproductive. Those punitive methods actually create more violence rather than preventing it, even though the justification for them is usually, oh, we need to use them to protect our staff. But the staff are actually a lot safer in the places that don't use those methods. So we're really trying to promote reform there. Some of you are members, might have even gotten mailings today around that very issue. We expect a bill on that to be introduced probably on Monday. Even though it's late in the session, we think it's still going to happen and move forward. Some other bills, House Bill 1313 is on civil asset forfeiture. This is where the practice where police confiscate property, and they can say if they suspect a crime, they can confiscate money or cars or other property from people, and then it's very, very hard to get it back. And this is a much abused process in much of the country. Our laws in Colorado aren't the worst in the country, but they're not the best either, and this would be to improve our civil asset forfeiture laws. House Bill 1314 is called the Right to Rest Bill. This is around the rights of people who are homeless. This is what we've done a lot of work, especially locally in Denver, but in a number of other communities in Grand Junction and Fort Collins and Colorado Springs around the rights of people who are who don't have homes. And this bill is to try to prevent sort of a race to the bottom where every community tries to be the most unfriendly to homeless people so that they'll go somewhere else. Which doesn't even really work, by the way, but it's some of what we've been seeing, an explosion of ordinances that are really aimed at people experiencing homelessness. House Bill 1268, this is an interesting sort of little bill, but it is one that's related to immigration, although what it does is it actually decreases the penalty for a whole set of crimes from 1 year to 364 days. You might say, why would you do that? It's because right now, the way the immigration laws are written, if somebody who is documented, this is not about people who are undocumented even, this is about people who have green cards or visas, they're not citizens, but they are legally here. But if they are accused of a crime that has a penalty of 1 year or more, they can be instantly deported. If that crime is 364 days, it's under the 1 year limit, and that deportation rule doesn't apply. So you can see why we're trying to make that change to the law. There's another bill, House Bill 1230, it was introduced by Representative Salazar, Joe Salazar, and it's one that would also be around limiting things that Colorado would do in cooperation with national immigration requests, or if some other things that are not currently being proposed, but if they were ever to happen around a Muslim registry or around even internment camps, which we have seen in this country, it actually happened in this country, that Colorado would not cooperate with that. And that's what that bill is about. One other important bill that we're working on that should also be introduced very shortly, but it's a jail delay bill at the municipal level, and it's to prevent prevent people from being held as long as they often currently are held in jails before getting a hearing in court. Right now, if you look at jails, I'm not talking about prisons, I'm talking about jails, which are the local ones, around the state, a majority of people in our jails in this state are there not because they've been convicted of a crime. They're there because they're being held on pretrial detention. And often they can't, there may be bail, but they can't afford to bail out. That's the majority of people in our jails right now are on pretrial detention. They're not there because they've been convicted of a crime. And especially in some smaller and more rural areas in the state, the courts don't meet that often. There aren't hearings that even happen very often, and people can spend a long period of time they could spend longer in jail than they would spend if they were convicted of the crime that they're accused of. We're working with the Colorado Municipal League to get legislation some consensus legislation on this that would shorten the time that people can be held without a hearing in these sorts of circumstances. These are things that affect people's lives in many ways. Some of this is work we were already doing, and we will continue to do. And at the same time, we will respond to the things that are coming from what's going on nationally. Our legal work continues to move forward. We just settled a racial profiling case with Ryan and Benjamin Brown in Colorado Springs. Racial profiling and police practices is an ongoing area of our work, but it's another example of one where the national picture affects it, because we're hearing messages out of the Department of Justice and the leadership of the Department of Justice saying that they want to stop investigating police when there are potential abuses. This is, I think, a really dangerous move, and it's going to rely again more on us at the state level after what happened in Ferguson, for example. The Department of Justice put out an excellent report that, if you haven't read it, it's worth reading, about what happened in Ferguson and the racial dynamics, the financial dynamics of what was going on in Ferguson. It's really profound, but I'm afraid that we may be looking at a Department of Justice that won't do that work anymore and may even be counterproductive on issues of police practices. And so, again, it's going to fall on us at the state level to really do this work. Certainly there were promises during the campaign to do things like reinstate torture in this country, to expand stop and frisk practices, to do more militarization of the police. And these are things that, if they do become real, we will respond to them. We'll be watching at the state level, we'll be watching at the national level. But there's a lot going on. We definitely have our hands full. We're not celebrating, about all the people that are coming forward, because we're not happy about some of the reasons that are behind that. But I am encouraged that people are stepping forward in the circumstances that we have. And if we really do keep this effort up, if we don't burn out and we don't just sort of settle in and forget, if we keep this going, this could also be a time that really renews our democracy in the end. And I hope that's what we get out of this. It's a challenging time for us at the ACLU. It's a challenging time for a lot of people. But I see, the way I see people responding also gives me a lot of hope.